From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Caudette. More Idaho Matters right now. New York Times bestselling author Ridley Pearson is back with his latest installation of the Kingdom Keeper series, and we are lucky enough to have Ridley joining us once again. Ridley, it is always such a pleasure to have you on the program.
Likewise, Gemma. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so for folks who may not be familiar with the Kingdom Keepers series, give us an overview of these books.
Right, so there are 13 books in the series, or will be. The original seven were set in present time, and they had five kids getting inside the Disney parks after dark, only to realize that the characters that are in Disney come alive at night and have their own little world in there. And during that series, there are threats to the magic, whether it's going to be good magic or dark magic as the years go on. That morphed into a second series called The Return, when those same characters went back to 1957 and opening day in Disneyland, and once again encountered the Disney villains and had to try to save the Disney magic. The book that's coming out is called Villains' Realm, Inheritance 2. And the Inheritance series takes place in 2040. It's an homage to Walt Disney, who, prior to his death, had envisioned making Epcot a full community someday, with as many as 40,000 people living in and around it. So Inheritance, all three books, it's a trilogy, are set inside this community outside of Epcot. And I wanted to explore what would happen if the Kingdom Keepers, years on in their lives, married and had kids. So the Inheritance series is about these Kingdom kids in 2040 who realize they can draw portals from pieces of Epcot into the international parks.
So I want to go back for a minute to this homage to Walt Disney himself. I had no idea that he actually had this vision of Epcot like being a place for people to live. I've been to Epcot. I mean many times, and I'm trying to envision this as a place where people would live. So is this, I don't think this is something that a lot of people are aware of.
They may not be. It's, you can actually see, I was fortunate enough to have the Imagineer show me the early plans. And you can see them in some of the Disney books, and I believe you can still see them in Epcot itself. It might be in the U.S. pavilion. Epcot is a fun park because it's divided into two halves. One half has these amazing rides, and the other half is a world showcase. They have something like nine countries represented. So you'll go on little mini attractions and sort of cultural studies of different countries. And in the U.S., I think there is one. Gemma, you can't believe what these look like from the aerial view. You see these drawings, and these sort of lollipops cul-de-sacs run out in city planning from the hub of Epcot. And really, they were going to house 40,000 people, have mass transit out to those homes. It was, you know, it was an amazing vision that he had. And I just wanted to make it come real. And so I have.
I love that so much. Okay, so I know we've talked about this before, but how did you get so involved with Disney and writing these books about Disney?
Out of pure luck. Do you still write thank you notes, Gemma?
Every once in a while. I do make my kids write them, if anything else.
Well, I always had to write them, and I still do. And it was really from writing a thank you note, because Disney had invited me in as a VIP along with Dave Barry and gave us the most amazing 3 days in Walt Disney World you could ever ask for. So I wrote a thank you note, and that led to a call from an editor at Disney Books who had helped set up this whole tour for us. And during that call, the editor, Wendy Lefcon, asked me If I could use my crime writing skills, at that time I was fully a crime writer, to create an inventive, exciting series inside the Disney parks for a younger reader audience. And I was honored and thrilled, and I talked them into letting me into their parks after hours when everybody had gone home to see what it would be like in there with the lights off, the music off, and no people in there. And they have since allowed me, between their parks and their cruise ships, to do this 31 times.
Oh my gosh.
And take furious notes about what it's like to go on It's a Small World in the pitch dark. And it has been a heck of a ride.
Okay, that just seems a little creepy. I'm sorry. A Small World in the dark.
It was really creepy.
That's just creepy.
The dolls moved, Gemma.
Oh,
the dolls were turned off and they moved. I will go to my grave swearing that is true. And I jumped about 5 feet out of the boat I was on.
I absolutely believe you. There is something about that ride.
It freaked me out.
Isn't it true that in your books that you, especially for these younger audiences, right? These younger kids, these younger readers, that you've, you talk about landmarks. I don't know if that's the right word, but in the books where if kids actually go to the parks, they can look for these little clues and everything if they're reading your books or have read them.
Absolutely. We at one point, Disney had me write what's called a quest, a Disney quest inside both Magic Kingdom and then later in Animal Kingdom. And by the time that quest closed, something like 60,000 students within Florida had bussed into Disney to follow the books and the quest of the books. I try to, one thing is I want to keep kids reading. So the books have to be exciting and crazy. And I use actual landmarks within the parks so that when they go with their parents, they can think, ooh, this is where Finn did this, or this is where Eli did this. And the same is true in Inheritance Villain's Realm. There are all sorts of Epcot touchstones that the kids will go through that then the readers can show up with their parents and be excited about being in the parks.
You know, and I have to tell you, Ridley, I think that is so critically important, right? That you write things that kids are excited to read, but it keeps them
reading. Yeah, you've got to do it. You know, they're stuck on their screens all the time. There's no greater emails that I get than those written by a parent of a child who was a stubborn reader at the age of 8 or 9 or 10 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
And they stumble onto either Peter and the Starcatchers that I wrote with Dave Barry or the Kingdom Keepers series. And the kids get started and they can't put them down and they find a love of reading. And that's, you know, that's my whole mission here. So when I get those emails, I just do backflips in my office.
Well, and I have to tell you, I mean, my kids have those books and my youngest is definitely my bigger reader. And I mean, he's read those and now he's obsessed with everything World War II. But, but here's the thing. It keeps them reading when they find something that they're interested in. And I
think and the more you read, the smarter you are. You know, it builds your vocabulary without you knowing it. You become a better speaker. You know more things, so you're more interesting to other people. Reading just all around is this sort of fertilizer for a great life.
Well, and then I think when they get to have this kind of inside Disney experience when they read your books, it adds to that love of reading.
I sure hope so. And it adds to their love of the parks. So that's the other benefit here is that there's kind of a cycle. In the early books, I put a character named Wayne into the books. Well, he was based off of a tour I did, again, after hours, 4:30 in the morning, of then Splash Mountain, which is now being rethemed. But he knew everything about the parks. And I had already started writing the books. And I said, you know, I've got this character, Fred, who works on an attraction and he knows everything about the parks. Could I use your name instead? And he agreed.
Goodness.
He was all excited about this. So I put Wayne into the books. The fun thing was, when kids then read the books and went on Splash Mountain, they would see this older guy with his name tag, a cast member with his name tag that said Wayne. And they would go, "Wait, are you Wayne from Kingdom Keepers?" And he would say, "You're darn right I am." And he would autograph their maps. It was so fun.
That is so cool. But
we had this feedback of the books to the parks to the books to the parks. It was really fun.
You are writing your first suspense thriller in 6 years. Talk to us about this.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about that. I was at a dinner party here in Sun Valley, and the host said, "You know, when's your next mystery coming out?" And I said, "Well, I've been involved in the younger reader world, and I really haven't even thought about it." And he said, "Write me another mystery."
So, oh my goodness.
I'm writing another mystery for Carl, and it's a really exciting book. I went over and spent time researching the Oregon coast. It's set in the southern part of the Oregon coast, where it's really, it's a really interesting place near Brookings and Port Orford, in places where the wind howls at 30 miles an hour all day and all night. Fascinating place. So it's a very confined, dark, tight thriller. And I'm nearing the end of the first draft as we speak.
So I have to tell you, you know, I grew up going to the Oregon coast. I have a brother who lives in. Yeah. I mean, I grew up, we'd go to Seaside, Cannon Beach, Lincoln City, but I have a brother who lives in Coos Bay. And so I know exactly where Brookings is. And that whole area you talk about, I mean, as you were describing it, I remember, like, I can picture myself being on the beach and being like, "The beach sucks. This is not fun. It's cold. It's wet. It's windy. It's dark."
It's horrible, it's really fun. And it's there's a lot of fast clouds that move overhead. It's just perfect for a thriller.
And it's actually
named after one of those beaches. I hope that I can finish the book. And if I do, it's going to be called Pistol River.
Oh, I love it. Okay, so you're still you're literally still writing this.
Yes, absolutely. Always writing.
Okay, and
the thrillers take anywhere from 4 to 8 drafts. And this is draft one. They're very slow. I rewrite every sentence at least 8 times, so it takes me another year of rewrites.
See, I couldn't even write it once, so there you go. What about your latest musical as well? Because, so many people know about Peter and the Starcatchers, but you've co-written another musical, has the name changed? You did a premiere and then the name changed?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I went to a boarding school called Pomfret School in Connecticut. And right before the pandemic, they contacted me about one of my young reader books called Steel Trap. And they wanted to make a play out of it. And they asked me to get the rights from Disney, and I did. And they were all set up to write a play, and they were going to perform it for an alumni weekend or something like that. And then the pandemic hit, and my books were all on hold until the pandemic and the supply levels cleared. And I wrote the man who was going to write it and asked if I could co-write it with him, and he agreed. And then as time went on, I proposed that I also write music and lyrics, and we turn it into a musical. And it took about 3 years for us to write it and write the music and put it on. We put it on in the May of 2022 for 3 nights at the school. And it was an amazing project, Gemma, and so much fun. And it came off wonderfully. The audience loved it, and it really wasn't very good. And by the time we raised our heads out of all of this, we said, you know, we can do much better. So we have thrown all of that out. We're going to keep about 8 of the 14 songs. I'm going to write another 10, and we're turning it into more of what the book was about, the book Steel Trap. So it's more of a mystery thriller. There's a skeleton on campus that's missing and all this stuff. And so it's only for high schools and middle schools, and it's kind of a comic mystery thriller, but it's a musical.
Well, and so how much does all of your experience with the Rock Bottom Remainders come into play when you're writing music?
My crazy author band with Stephen King and Amy Tan. Well, I think by playing with that band for the last 30 years, it's kept my love of music alive and of writing music alive. And it was just kind of a natural extension for me. I grew up loving musicals. I grew up in Connecticut. My parents took us into various shows, oh gosh, once a month our whole young lives. I saw Yul Brynner in The King and I. I mean, just amazing experiences. And I've just always loved theater, and especially musical theater. And I just had this great urge when Chip Lamb, who was going to write the script, got going, that it should be a musical and I should write the music and lyrics. I'm co-writing them with a guy named Paul Gregory here in town, amazing pianist. And I'm having a blast. It doesn't even matter if it ever gets produced. I'm just having so much fun doing it.
And before I let you go, we should talk about the Sun Valley Writers Conference. I know you have been so involved with this for so long, and it's coming up again this summer.
It is, and we have a spectacular lineup this year, including Dennis Lehane of Mystic River, Kristen Hanna of Nightingale.
I love Kristen Hanna.
Margaret Atwood is getting a major prize we give. It's going to be a heck of a time. I think tickets go on sale. Gosh, they may go on sale tomorrow, as a matter of fact. They sell out in 5 minutes. You have to sit there on the website just hitting return, 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 trying to get in to get your tickets. And one of these years, maybe even this year, we're going to beg you, Gemma, to come up and conduct some of the interviews.
Well, it would be my pleasure. I love reading. I love books. It is truly
This conference.
Well, I always love talking with you. Thank you for taking time out of your busy, busy schedule to chat with us about all of this. Really appreciate it, Ridley.
Oh, it's my thrill. I'm heading off to Disney World and Disneyland this weekend to do signings, and I hope to see my readers there. It's always a pleasure to be with you, Gemma. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.